A-U-T. Good morning, Montreal. You are tuned to the Wednesday Morning After on CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal. We have an extra special show for you today with three stacked pre-recorded interviews. This week we've covered music, arts and culture, and news. Also, in the second hour, we'll laugh with a podcast of In the Shower with Taz and Marcus. The first interview is with Caroline Gauthier and Mike Fan, business coach and opera queen of What the Pop Montreal. The second interview is with Issa Ibrahim over his release of his documentary film, Mad Love, which he entered into the Conquering Disabilities Festival. The third interview is with Isabelle Justo, creator of the Mental Health and Suicide Awareness Walk Montreal. 8 o'clock brings Democracy Now!, 8:15 brings Weather, and we'll listen to a podcast by the Headstuff Podcast Network called In the Shower with Taz and Marcus. This week's question is, why is sugar addictive? After some more songs, we'll wrap up the show. Let's start the day off with some music.
For every rock, there's a stepping stone. One that takes you further than before. And I can go your way, but I'll go on my way too. And when this world finally comes to an end, I will be right there beside you, remembering all the words you said. Like, take it day by day, my friend. Take it day by day, my friend. Take it day by day, my friend. For every seed there's a growing tree, one that's growing taller than before. And I'll just sit underneath, I'll watch those trees get high. And when this world finally comes to an end, I will be right there beside you, remembering all the words you said. I take it day by day, my friend. Take it day by day, my friend.
Take it day by day, my friend.
When this world finally comes to an end, I'll be right there, right there, beside you.
vaccination against COVID-19 is ongoing throughout Quebec. The combined effect of two doses ensures better efficacy of the vaccine, reducing the risk of getting and transmitting the virus. You'll also stay protected for a longer period of time. Coming to your appointment for the second dose of the vaccine is a must, whatever else is on your schedule. The second dose of vaccine is essential. A message from the Gouvernement du Québec.
Yes, Montreal presents What the Pop this year in Montreal with a brand new series of artist pop-ups around Montreal. Profits from sales are going back to the artists with the help of artistic business coach Caroline Gauthier of Yes Montreal. One of the artists who will be performing at the festival is Mike Fan. Let's get to know them during this interview. With us today, we have Caroline Gauthier and Mike Fan. Hi, Caroline and Mike, and welcome to the show.
Hi, Sheila. Thanks for having us.
Hi, Sheila. Thanks so much.
First, please introduce yourselves and tell us how you came to be involved with Yes Montreal and What the Pop.
I am an artist business coach at Yes Montreal. And what that means is that I provide services to artists of all disciplines to help them find their way in their work and how to monetize their skills and how to learn certain business skills like marketing and things like that. And What the Pop is one of the programs that's organized by Yes that we're very happy to get to work with a new cohort of artists every year.
Yes, and my name is Mike, and I actually submitted a application to the Yes What the Pop from last year, 2020. I actually found out about this event because Yes Montreal attended via Zoom a career workshop that McGill University hosted where I was completing my master's last year. And this seemed like a really interesting opportunity, and they were really championing diversity and inclusion, and I'll talk a little bit about my act later, but definitely within that sphere, and really found it an amazing experience, really, really welcoming, and met so many fantastic artists, mentors, and has since really provided me lots of really great career opportunities, creative opportunities, and thrilled to come back this year with my new opera company that I've created since, Opera Queens, and to bring back two of my artists from that as well. So we have a group of three this year, so I'm not alone. So really grateful and super excited, looking forward to tomorrow when it'll be our turn to perform.
What is the history of What the Pop Montreal?
Well, What the Pop is actually in its fourth year. And we're very happy and lucky that we get to keep doing this. So this is a program we get to do thanks to some grant support from the government. And basically, this started out as a way to help emerging artists showcase their work. So a lot of artists don't necessarily have the means to self-exhibit. So basically what we offer is a series of sales workshops. There's a media workshop offered by the CBC as well. And then we provide the physical space and the advertising so that artists can practice really getting their work in front of the eyes of the public.
Where and when is What the Pop Montreal happening this year?
What the Pop is now in its, so there are four events, two of which have already happened and two of which remain. One of them, as Mike mentioned, is tomorrow, Saturday, the 28th at St. Jacques Montreal, which is actually on St. Catherine Street at the corner of Mackay, and it's an outdoor street sale. And then there's one the following Saturday, which is at Riverside Montreal, which is a bar in St. Henry on the canal. And that one is an more of an evening performance, so from 5 to 9, and that will be happening with musicians, so local musicians.
Who's involved and what can we expect from this year's show?
The fun thing about What the Pop is that it's open to all artists. So there's no one definition of artist. So we've got people who are selling their crafts. We've got sculptors, we've got painters, photographers. Mike is doing drag opera, which is just fantastic. We had last week, we had conceptual performers, you know, performing on St. Catherine Street. We've got musicians of all genres. So we've got a metal band playing, a folk band, electronica. There's really no one definition of artist. So we've got all of these beautiful people performing and showcasing their work.
Who are you, Mike Fan? And what was your history on your way to What the Pop?
Yes, who indeed? Very philosophical questions. I wonder that sometimes. So yes, my name is Mike, and I'm a gender non-binary queer, second generation immigrant, Chinese Canadian, born in Edmonton, and currently based between Montreal and Toronto. And I'm an opera singer, primarily as an operatic tenor. As Caroline just alluded to, I often perform in drag, which has really been a very surprising kind of outlet in my operatic career, but not always. I've had quite an interesting history getting to this point into What the Pop, because I started as a classical pianist growing up, and that didn't really fit, so then I went off and did a pre-med degree and thought I'd become a doctor, and I think we all can tell that that's even further from where I should be heading. And then I ended up discovering quite literally my voice at 21, began taking lessons, and my teacher said, I think you should pursue this, there's maybe something here. And I said, okay, let's see. And fortunately, I had a lot of that musical training as well that still pays off to this day. And that kind of set me on this path towards singing, and ended up doing a second undergrad in voice at Laurier in Ontario, and then did recently finish my master's on a full scholarship at McGill University at the Sherlock School of Music. And so it's kind of developed into this. I first started doing drag in 2017 in Halifax when I was doing my first production of Carmen there with the Halifax Pride Festival, and like basically just put on a dress and did it. And being gender non-binary, you know, I'm very in touch with my feminine side, my masculine side. And it was a really liberating way to kind of discover my identity and kind of sing repertoire that I'm normally not really able to, because in classical music, it has a history of being very Eurocentric, being very heteronormative. And it's been a really exciting way to really reclaim that for minorities and multiple minorities such as myself, who don't always find ourselves in music. And so with What the Pop last year, I was really thrilled and I'm always pleasantly surprised when people are really, I don't think I should be anymore, because I think now I know I'm onto something. Yes, What the Pop last year was really very affirming because they really championed my act and really gave me a support, and a lot of the artists were really supportive as well. And had a really great experience, and they actually filmed some video vignettes of me performing as my drag persona Tanya Zmania, and as well me, which was really fun when they put them together. I had mentioned saying, oh, it's my dream maybe one day to, you know, have a company where there's other people like me, if they're out there, who want to perform opera and drag, do something a little bit different and open up the repertoire, do something a little bit innovative. Which we're all really, really wanting, especially during the pandemic when there's been so much talk about inclusion and race and social justice. It just happened that, funny enough, during the pandemic, there were all the resources presented to make it happen. I ended up creating Opera Queens, and even with audio, I have my shirt on. Gotta represent. And yeah, since we've currently have 10 singers, 2 pianists, and we recently received a $50,000 Canada Council for the Arts grant, and currently filming our last day, actually after this interview, we're filming till 10 p.m. tonight, the remaining parts of our 2 film productions. Through my work in drag as well, I also received a $17,500 Joseph Armand Bombardier Canada Graduate Scholarship for my master's to present a recital in drag as well too on the music of Pauline Verdot. So it's really kind of been a very big whirlwind, but I definitely know that this is the right avenue, because everything is just clicking, meeting so many wonderful people in the right place at the right time, and it just feels very right. So I'm really grateful, because I actually wasn't sure if I was going to apply for last year because I was really busy at that time, but something really spoke to me about Yes Montreal and who I met there at the event, career networking event I'd went to, and I'm really glad I did it. And a lot of the friends I met from last year, a lot, especially jewelry. I unfortunately left my jewelry at the venue, but I've been wearing some in my shows and, like, you know, taking a lot of photos and things like that, and always tagging them, and we still keep in touch. So, and some of them are performing this year again too. So it's really cool to be reunited. So yeah, kind of a little bit of an unexpected journey. I wouldn't have it any other way. Super, super grateful that it all worked out in the way it did, as unconventional as it may be.
To give us a taste of the festival, maybe hear some of your music.
Yes, absolutely. And as Caroline mentioned, I think even compared to last year, there's so many more different acts, but I'm excited to represent the classical side. Yeah.
This is Viardot on the Wednesday morning after.
Со сохи без уханы забыты в книге вижу я, и вот уже вещью странной душа наполнилась моя, и вот уже вещью странной душа Где твои
Tell us about the artist pop-up series around town.
So yeah, as I mentioned, it's a series of four pop-ups, so four consecutive Saturdays. Tomorrow is the third Saturday, so we're halfway through, really excited. Tomorrow's going to be at St. Jack's, so out on the street on St. Catherine and Mackay, and it's going to be a mix of visual artists as well as performing artists like Mike and their group. And then the following Saturday is going to be at Riverside. That's going to be a musical performance, and that's going to be really exciting. So we've got completely different musical acts playing at Riverside, which is an outdoor bar, outdoor venue, and that's going to be from 5 to 8.
As an artistic business coach, Caroline, how do you work with the artists at What the Pop Montreal?
At What the Pop, I got my involvement. So first of all, it's a whole team that organizes What the Pop that I love being a part of. And my role has been a bit of a facilitation role. So I gave a sales workshop to the artists just to try to help them learn how to present themselves to the public and how to prepare themselves for an event like this. The feedback has been really good because I, you know, encouraged them, for example, to print out QR codes so that people could follow them on Instagram. And I've seen a bunch of them doing it at their stands. So it's really rewarding for me from that perspective. I just love being physically at the event and able to connect with these artists, some of which I've met before, some are new to me, and just, you know, trying where I can to offer any tips or support to what they're presenting.
What is the role of Yes Montreal with Montreal artists?
Yes Montreal offers artist coaching to individual artists, which is, it's a service that actually is a little bit, you know, in my opinion, underserved, because there's a lot of organizations out there that support companies, artistic companies, and offer coaching and mentorship. And we actually work with individual artists. So painters, musicians, every kind of artist, and they can come to us and get the kind of support that, and the kind of education that they didn't necessarily get in schools, so in art schools. So they learn things like marketing, like budgeting, accounting, things which are really, really important to have a successful artist career.
If our listeners want tickets or more information, where should they go?
They can visit the Yes Montreal website, or you can also look up Yes on Instagram, on Twitter, on Facebook. We are advertising this like crazy, so you should be able to see more posts about What the Pop.
Well, I'm glad we could help you to promote What the Pop today. So thank you for your interview.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Sheila.
You've been listening to Caroline Gauthier speaking about What the Pop Montreal. We've also spent some time with Mike Fan. I am your host, Sheila Ferrando.
Early in the morning, before the sun rose, when the first bird sang, even while everyone was still asleep.
Morning. On that morning.
When the sun comes out.
This morning, baby.
Cock-a-doodle-doo. I hear the rooster crowing.
Now you must wake up.
Now every morning when I wake up,
I woke up this morning with
the kiss of the morning.
Got up 7:30 every morning. Have the same breakfast.
Réveillez-moi à 8 heures demain matin.
Good morning.
Good morning. Early in the morning.
Riding a bike made of bacon and eggs.
In the morning,
in the morning.
the sun replace the moonlight.
Has this ever happened to any of you, or will it happen to any of you, on the morning after the night before?
You are listening to The Morning After on CKUT 90.3 on the FM dial.
Issa Ibrahim is a graduate of NYC's High School of Art and Design and studied at the School of Visual Arts and the Art Students League. In the 1990s, after enduring the trauma of American racism, marijuana addiction, losing his mind, and a devastating family tragedy, Issa Ibrahim found himself institutionalized indefinitely in an asylum. His current project is his entry to the Conquering Disabilities Festival with his documentary film, Mad Love. With us today, we have Issa Ibrahim. Hi, Issa, and welcome to the show.
Hello, Sheila. Welcome again. This is my second time on your show, so I'm very excited to be here again with you.
Well, we're very glad to have you back again. So please, for the people who didn't catch you last time, introduce yourself and tell us how you came to be involved with the Creedmoor Psychiatric Institute.
Well, hello all. My name is Issa, and I'm an artist, an author, a musician, a filmmaker, and an activist. In the late 80s, early 90s, I suffered a traumatic psychotic break. And as a result of that, there was a horrible family tragedy that ensued, which led me into the criminal justice system, which then, by sheer luck, thank God, led me into the psychiatric system. And I say that only because going into the criminal justice system would have been even more horrific than what I experienced in the psychiatric system. But in that psychiatric system, I was sent for 20 years to Creedmoor Psychiatric Center, chronicled very extensively. Well, I spoke last time on your program in my book, The Hospital Always Wins. And it was a mixed blessing in that I spent 20 years in a madhouse, and trust me, it was a madhouse, but I had an art program, a rehabilitation program that changed my life and informed my life. So it was a mixed blessing.
Now, we all have a story. And in the case of mentally ill, that means revealing the diagnosis. How were you diagnosed at Creedmoor and why?
It's interesting. At Creedmoor, I was given about 3 or 4 different diagnoses over the years. And I discovered that it was because every time I got a new doctor, because when you're there for a period of time, it's inevitable another doctor will come on to your case, and your other doctor will leave, either he was an intern or whatever. And every time I got a new doctor, I was given a different diagnosis, maybe because they feel like they have to come on and feel like they're curing the demon, or there's some hubris involved. I'm not sure. But my first diagnosis was drug-induced psychosis. And then after that, another doctor came on, gave me schizophreniform disorder. Then another doctor came on, gave me schizoaffective disorder. And finally, after a while, it was settled on schizophrenia, paranoid schizophrenia, chronic type. But even that was amended after a while when another doctor came on. And the chronic type was amended because it seemed to be in remission thanks to the medication that I was on. But I've settled on schizophrenia, and I guess I could be happy with that. Although I'll be honest, when I went in for a tune-up 2 or 3 years ago, I was rehospitalized briefly. My medication needed to be readjusted. And another doctor came on and tried to give me bipolar disorder. And I was told that they're trying to eradicate the schizophrenia diagnosis so that sometime by the mid or late 21st century, there'll be no more schizophrenia. So that's why most people who were once schizophrenic are now being diagnosed with bipolar. So it's interesting. It changes with the weather almost, it seems like. But that was my diagnosis. So I'll settle with schizophrenia for now. That's my diagnosis.
You have won several longstanding battles in your life for love and freedom. How did you win your way free from Creedmoor Psychiatric Institute?
I'll be honest. I was very fortunate in that I had a talent. And I could paint and paint well and paint well enough even further so that people seeing my paintings would want them and buy them. I'm not patting myself on the back, but that was just a reality. And as a result, I sold a lot of my paintings through the back door of Creedmoor and saved all the money to the point where when I finally decided, you know, I suffered enough and could stop punishing myself for what I'd done and why I was there for so long and misbehaving for a while, which I was doing, I had enough money to hire a legal team and a couple of doctors to counter the Creedmoor doctor's determinations. I sued my way out. And I was fortunate to get before an honest judge who heard my case and said, you know, this guy doesn't need to be there anymore. Regardless of what he did and what may have transpired while he was there, he's done his time and he seems healthy, so let's let him go. And that's how I got out. It was a hard-fought legal battle. And I tell other people in hospitals when I've done outreach to various other hospitals, not everyone may be fortunate enough to sell their paintings or have a talent that people would want for their homes to then pay money for. But whatever you do, save your money, because you never know when you'll need $1,000, because that's basically all it will cost, $2,000 or $3,000, to hire a lawyer and a legal team, even in a rudimentary sense. So that's how I got out. I'm very fortunate to have gotten out that way.
Your other major win has been in love with Susan Spangenberg.
Yes.
What is the Susan Spangenberg story?
Susan is a wonderful, wonderful person in my life, and a wonderful person just in general. I met her in 1995. She ended up in a state hospital, which shouldn't happen really to anyone unless you're really terribly sick. And she wasn't really terribly sick, but it's just she went from the psych ER to a psych hospital, a state hospital, which was a misstep in justice. But she ended up there and we met. And she only spent like 2 or 3 months there. She was deemed well and let go, but she kept coming back. She stayed in my life. She kept coming back to visit. And we developed a strong friendship, and then we fell in love, and we've been in love and had a strong friendship for the last 26 years. As artists, we live together in an apartment in Queens, and she's just the love of my life, and she just enriches my life. She's made it all worthwhile, this whole experience. Some would reflect on being in the system for so long and still being attached, as I am, to the system, and look at it with bitterness, but she's made it just, she's been the sunshine in my life. I really owe a lot of my success to her.
What did you publish and create during your time at Creedmoor?
I was fortunate to have been writing all the time that I was there. The 20 years that I was there, I kept a journal. But as I was writing it, it wasn't like, oh, today this happened or that happened. I was writing this journal like a novel, you know, with lofty ambitions, perhaps. But it made it easy to then transition that when I got out to my published novel, my published memoir, The Hospital Always Wins, which was published by Chicago Review Press in 2016. So that was a tremendous achievement for me to see all those stacks of notebooks and so forth turn into a novel. I also have a pretty impressive body of work that I've been painting all the time that I was in Creedmoor. So I have a body of work that has ended up in certain people's collections I've sold over the years. And I have a pretty extensive catalog of songs that I recorded while in the hospital under their noses. You know, at 3 o'clock in the morning, I go into a bathroom or a closet somewhere and record a bunch of songs. And now I've got like 15 CDs out that no one's buying, but they are chronicle to my time in Creedmoor. And they all have songs of loss and ambiguity, and they're all centered around mental health themes, pop music around mental health themes.
What accolades have you earned?
The accolades I've earned have been things that have been incremental, that helped me just go further along every step of the way, a little breadcrumb that allowed me to continue on. I was recently nominated for Best Director and Best Documentary at the Green Disabilities Through Film Festival. Before that, my previous film, Patients' Rights, won Director of Merit Award. So every couple of, and then the book came out and it was on Oprah's list for best books of the summer. So it seems like every couple of years, there's something that just pats me on the back or taps me on the shoulder and reminds me, you're doing well, you're doing okay, keep going. Try this. Yeah. Starting from way back in 1996, when I was an inpatient in the hospital in Creedmoor, and I got a grant for like $15,000 to mount a show in the community, an individual artist grant. Everyone who heard about it, when they did hear about it, was blowing their top. How could you do this under our nose? How could you do it? What are you gonna do with all that money? Blah, blah, blah. So every step of the way, there's been something to push me on further. I think it's my mom kind of like blessing me from heaven and God, if you believe in God, or just a spiritual force that I pray to that has answered my prayers. So I feel fortunate.
How were you involved with the Conquering Disabilities Festival this year?
Susan, we made this film last year, Mad Love, and then Susan just said, send it everywhere. Everywhere that says mental health, you know, everywhere that says mental health, just send it out. We've got to get it somewhere. It's bound to land somewhere. And one of the first organizations that reached out to us wanting to screen it was the Conquering Disabilities Through Film Festival. And it was held in Las Vegas, and they even extended an invitation for us to come out and be there, but COVID kind of prevented that. You know, I was a little skittish about going, leaving New York and going to Las Vegas, and Susan was definitely frightened of the whole COVID thing, so we decided not to attend the festival. But it did garner those two nominations for Best Director and Best Documentary. So they've been a great organization to help us out. And we're also screening at the Rio Recovery Film Festival in November. So things are turning out well.
Could we listen to some audio from the documentary?
Yes.
This is from Mad Love on CKUT.
Issues Gallery presents.
Mine that I like?
What was it?
Mine is stories within a story.
Stories within a story.
Because there's plural stories within his story. That's better, actually, Jeeva.
That's pretty. I'd be happier with that.
We're not sure yet.
No, it's going to be edited down to one whole hour long documentary.
Hour? 1 hour long?
If I can get hold of it.
Yes. That's his idea. But what's your idea? Because what are you doing?
I love you and you love me too. But you never thought that you'd have to choose between my love for you and your new bruise. The things they said went upside your head. Now you never thought you'd be so confused. I'm looking out for you and your new
should be more afraid of the people that are undiagnosed because they're not controlled and medicated. They're the people walking around society that say, there's nothing wrong with me. And the person who walks around and says, there's nothing wrong with me, is the scariest person in the world.
I had a lot of doubts in 1989, 1990. I had nothing but doubts. Nothing. I didn't know what the hell was going on. I had no idea what the hell was going on.
My grandmother was like, take her to the psychiatrist, and my parents were like, are you crazy? You know, there's nothing wrong with her. My mom would just be like, she just needs a good slap in the face or something.
And this could probably be the wrap up to this whole thing. That second piece is meeting Susan, and that's really all it was about.
Mad Love, a documentary about art, romance, and mental illness.
If our listeners wish to see Mad Love, where should they go?
It can be viewed on November 5th to the 11th at the Real Recovery Film Festival for free. It's totally free, totally gratis. Just sign in. And the website is Film Festival Flicks. FLIX, filmfestivalflix.com. You can view it for free. And it's a great organization. They deal with mental health. They deal with recovery, substance abuse. They're a fantastic organization. And they've given us a lot of love over the years. So come check it out there.
Well, thank you for your interview today.
Thank you, Sheila. You're a wonderful champion. God bless. God bless.
You've been listening to Issa Ibrahim speaking about himself, his woman, and their new documentary film, Mad Love, which they entered at the Conquering Disabilities Festival this year. I am your host, Sheila Ferrando.
Sarah's excited to celebrate her birthday at a restaurant. She's thought about it all week. She invited her friends. She got a new dress. She went to the restaurant. She wasn't allowed in the restaurant. She had to put away her new dress. She couldn't see her friends. And she thought about it all week.
Don't wait until it hits you. Get vaccinated. A vaccination passport is now required to enter certain public spaces. A message from the Gouvernement du Québec.
Isabelle Justo is organizing the Mental Health and Suicide Awareness Walk Montreal to take place September 11th, 2021. With us today, we have Isabelle Justo. Hi, Isabelle, and welcome to the show.
Hi, Sheila. Thanks for having me.
First, please introduce yourself and tell us how you came to be involved in the Mental Health and Suicide Awareness Walk Montreal.
So my name is Isabelle, and I decided to create the walk to help raise awareness and lessen the stigma around mental illness and suicide loss. I facilitate suicide loss groups, and it's really sad to see, and in the last year especially, how misunderstood suicide is and how families have to move through the devastating loss of a family member by suicide. They're re-victimized by the lack of understanding around this cause of death. So it's something I see often, and it's just really sad for the families. I mean, they've been through enough, and like I said, there's a real lack of understanding out there. So yeah, so that's part of why I'm doing this walk, to help with that. And also based on the pandemic, there's been a lot of isolation. Very few people have not been affected emotionally on a mental health level. So I think the timing is good for it.
What were the statistics on suicide before the pandemic? And what are those numbers looking like now as we move towards the green zone everywhere?
So in 2019, pre-pandemic, statistically, according to the Mental Health Association, the Canadian Mental Health Association, 2.5% of Canadians reported having suicidal thoughts. And in comparison, in the thick of the pandemic, the survey found that 6% recently experienced thoughts or feelings of suicide as a result of the pandemic. That's huge. So in comparison, 6% of Canadians recently experienced thoughts or feelings of suicide as a result of the pandemic. That's in the thick of this pandemic. On top of that, actually, you know, we're kind of facing a crisis as far as access to mental health services in Quebec. We have, last year, we had about 18,000 people on waiting lists for mental health services, and there's up to a 24-month wait list to see a psychologist, so that's pretty significant.
What is the history of the walk in the States?
It originated many years ago in Dublin, Ireland, actually. Suicide rates were really high. There were just a few hundred participants, and it's expanded worldwide within hundreds of thousands of people walking in four continents. So the idea was that you would begin the event in darkness and walk or run as the sun rises, symbolizing that there's hope for the future.
Who are the spokespeople for the Mental Health Suicide Awareness Walk Montreal?
So I'm actually the spokesperson. I created this walk on my own. So it's been a pretty big initiative. I thought maybe we'd have 100 people, and it's based on a lot of the support that I've gotten via media, via, you know, different businesses, mental health organizations. Everybody seems to have gotten on board. I think we're going to be quite a large group. I'm the representative. I actually personally have lost family members to suicide and mental illness. So I grew up with a mother who suffered from schizophrenia. I lost my husband to suicide many years ago. And then more recently, 3 years ago, my twin sister to suicide. So my twin sister was a therapist. She was a mental health advocate, and she pioneered a lot of women's groups. She helped a lot of people. Sadly, in the end, she lost her own battle to depression. That's why this cause is so close to my heart. And I dedicate so much of myself to trying to help people feel like they're not alone, that they have a voice.
Why is it important that we stand together and walk?
So these events give people the courage to open up about their own struggles and a platform to break the silence without fear of being judged. There's a lot of judgment and stigma around mental illness, around suicide. So they help people to feel less alone, that others care. Family and friends, neighbors and coworkers walk side by side, supporting each other and in memory of those we've lost.
Is the Mental Health and Suicide Awareness Walk Montreal raising any money through its efforts, and how?
So I'm not asking for any donations, only that people show up for the short walk in solidarity those struggling with mental health issues and suicide loss survivors.
How many people and from what walks of life do you expect your participants?
So I suspect, based on all the support and spreading the word, like I said before, that will be a few hundred people for our first annual walk. Some are speculating we're going to be maybe 1,000 people or more. I'm not sure about that. I'm hoping that it's going to be a big group. So I'm hoping it'll include people from all walks of life. All are welcome, that's for sure. There, like I said before, there are very few people who've not been affected by the pandemic this past year. So I suspect quite a few people will show up to support.
What can we expect to see from the walk this year? What will be the events surrounding the day's activities?
So, in with a warm welcome and big thank you to all who showed up to support the cause, followed by some short speeches by people who've struggled with anxiety, depression, suicide attempts, and/or losses. We'll be giving out free t-shirts and reusable gift bags filled with water, granola bars, apples, and resource material, most importantly, for those who need to reach out. This followed by a 2.5 kilometer walk on the mountain to Beaver Lake. So I'm praying for good weather on that day, but if it's raining, the event's not going to be canceled. We'll still do it.
If our listeners want more information on the Mental Health and Suicide Awareness Walk Montreal, where should they go?
They can go to our website, www.suicideandmentalhealth.com. They can also join our Facebook group at www.facebook.com/groups/s.a.w.montreal.
Thank you for your interview today.
Thank you so much, Sheila, for supporting this cause via this interview. I'm really grateful for that.
You've been listening to Isabel Giusto speaking about the Mental Health and Suicide Awareness Walk. I am your host, Sheila Ferrando.
I wrote my You're tuned in to the Wednesday Morning After Show with your host, Sheila Ferrando, and sound by Matthew Jackson on Radio CKUT 90.3 FM Montreal or online at ckut.ca.
Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. The U.S. military has completed its withdrawal from Afghanistan, bringing an official end to the longest war in U.S. history. Marine General Frank McKenzie said the last troops flew out of Kabul just before midnight local time on Monday.
Tonight's withdrawal signifies both the end of the military component of the evacuation, but also the end of the nearly 20-year mission that began in Afghanistan shortly after September 11, 2001.
The Taliban and its supporters celebrated the U.S. withdrawal, setting off fireworks and firing tracer bullets into the night sky. The Taliban's now in full control of Afghanistan, including the Kabul International Airport, which the U.S. used to evacuate over 120,000 people fleeing the Taliban over the past 17 days. According to the Cost of War Project, the U.S. spent over $2.2 trillion in Afghanistan and Pakistan. By one count, over 170,000 people died in the fighting. After headlines, we'll go to Kabul for the latest. Hurricane Ida has been downgraded to a tropical depression after it hit the Louisiana coast Sunday as a Category 4 storm on the 16th anniversary of Hurricane Katrina. On Monday, Ida continued to bring torrential rain and flooding to Louisiana and southern Mississippi, where two people died when a flooded highway collapsed. Louisiana's main utility company, Entergy, says it could be weeks before it restores electricity to nearly a million people in the storm's path, including all of New Orleans. We'll have more on Hurricane Ida later in the broadcast. The U.S. COVID-19 outlook continues to worsen, with hospitalizations rising and deaths averaging more than 1,300 per day. On Monday, the Biden administration announced a civil rights probe into five states that have banned local officials from